Computer Systems has provided a grant in support of this program. Gray Wolf Computer Systems offers custom computer systems and personalized service for repairs, upgrades, and networks in the East Cliff Village Shopping Center in Santa Cruz. It is Friday, August 6th, 2004, 10:04 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. My name's Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP or its board, the Pataphysical Broadcasting Foundation. Today on Geek Speak, right after the news, we're taking all your calls and questions and comments. Phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Or you can go to geekspeak.org, click on The Geeks, and click on Send a Message. To ask us a question about your computers, technology, and the like, we're here to help. I'll give out that contact information again when I invite your participation in about 15 minutes. We're also going to have a little discussion about getting internet access in the Santa Cruz Mountains and the trials and tribulations of dealing with a large corporation's phone mail system. That's all today on Geek Speak. Stay tuned. This is Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are geeks Miles Elam and John Tracy, and soon to join us, Sean Cleveland. Miles and John, hello. Good morning.
Good morning.
Before we get into our discussion about the internet dilemmas, high-speed internet dilemmas in the Santa Cruz Mountains and all over rural America, let's do a little bit of Geek Speak news. Miles, I'd like to start with you today, sir.
Microsoft has delayed Service Pack 2. Again.
Now, haven't we been talking about Service Pack 2 for a while now?
For months.
Why are they delaying it this time?
The most prominent reason, they haven't really said exactly what the reasons were. They were just saying production problems. But some people have a theory that it's the fact that once the patch is applied, 3 out of 5 computers don't come back up.
Oh, that's not good.
Even for Windows.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Okay, so let's do this.
Now, I mean, in their defense, it's a monumental problem. There are a lot of computers out there with a lot of different hardware.
Yeah.
But, yeah, 3 out of 5 computers coming back up means that it's not ready for production.
I would agree.
Yeah.
Now, of course, that is a good point about Microsoft products. The software package, that Microsoft operating system, is put on, gosh, this must be tens of thousands of different computers when you look at all the different configurations you can do with a computer. Compared to, let's say, Apple, who doesn't have as many problems like this, where they have just their manufacturing line. So you're talking about 100 computers or less. At any one time, we're talking less than 50. So that's the difference in what Microsoft is doing with their operating system versus what Apple's doing with their operating system. That's a good point to bring up whenever we see that Microsoft's having trouble. It's a difficult problem.
Right.
But let's do this one thing for everyone. Let's not talk about Service Pack 2 again until it's released and we know it's working. And then we'll make a good announcement. Time to go get it. Till then, I don't want to talk about
it
anymore.
Still, I'm thinking about the Empire Strikes Back sound where it's like, watch this. Watch what?
John, for you, sir.
Space news today, we're going to talk a little bit about Messenger. NASA launched their Messenger probe on August 3rd. And it's going to be heading around the Earth once, around Venus, and then eventually it'll settle into orbit around Mercury, the closest planet to the Sun. It's a 1.2-ton or 1,100-kilogram spacecraft made by the John Hopkins University. Actually, it was designed and built by John Hopkins.
That's a pretty big spacecraft.
Yeah, it is. It's pretty dense. Mm-hmm. It's got 8 scientific packages on it. I'm sorry, 7 scientific packages, and it's going to determine Mercury's composition, surface, map its magnetic fields, which is important because it lives so close to the Sun, and yet it has such a strong magnetic field. Why is this possible? It's also kind of an anomaly because it's 1/3 the size of the Earth, yet it has the exact same density, well, not exact same, but it has a similar density to Earth.
Similar density or similar mass?
Density.
Okay.
They think that its core is about 75% of the volume of the planet, an iron core. a molten iron core, which is significant in that it would probably explain why it generates such a strong magnetic field. So anyway, they're going to go find out why.
And when is it targeted to be around to Mercury?
2011 in March.
Gosh, just to get to Mercury, that many years.
Well, it's going to be, it's taking the long way. Mm-hmm. it's not an easy thing to insert a spacecraft that close to the sun. So they're going about it in a very cautious way. It's a very harsh environment that close in. So let's see, in 2005, it'll have an Earth flyby. And in 2008, in January and October, it'll have, and in September 2009, it'll be around Venus. So they'll be using some of the instruments on Venus and testing.
Not that I really want to get into the subject again, but does it have a radioactive power supply or a solar panel?
It has solar panels.
Okay, it's probably its power supply.
Because it's going to be right next to the
sun. Pretty close.
I don't know if it also has a backup nuclear generator or not.
I would assume not. If you've got solar power, you might as well use it.
Redundancy is redundancy, but it's expensive to get stuff into space.
That's true. Thanks for that, John. Miles?
Australia, who...
Australia is a...
Yes, it's a country and a continent.
All right.
And an island.
And a government, I guess, because the government's speaking at this point, yes?
Right. Well, in a sense, the last elections in Australia were done through e-voting, which I'm sure everyone is familiar with in the United States and the problems that have come up from it through Diebold and other such companies and certification problems and the like. What made the Australian voting system different was that the voting software was open source. In other words, you had computer scientists all going, perusing over the code, looking to see if there was any problems, any loopholes, if it followed all of the requirements needed for voting. And when the actual vote day came, it was a resounding success. There were no major reported problems.
Now, do you know if their system actually had like a paper trail, and was there some backup from?
I don't know the specifics. I think I've read it in the past, but I've forgotten the specifics now. But this has recently come into a glitch. The company that the Australian government contracted to do the
implementation
vote last time have now come out saying, you know, we actually want to make the source closed to the public so that people can't see it and check it. And
why?
They were citing security reasons and also some intellectual property reasons.
Right. They want to put some patents in place and make some money.
Right. But they're still saying, well, but it's still kind of open source. But in fact, everyone who's looked at it has said this is even worse than Microsoft's shared source policy, which still has Microsoft retaining most of the software, but still allowing select people to look at it. This is far more onerous than that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a really sad thing to see.
And is it happening? Is it going to happen? Or is the Australian government going to say no?
They're still talking about it.
Well, let's keep us informed on that, because that's a good...
But it's something, to watch that when it goes closed, this is what happens in California, for example, with Diebold and the certification problems. But when it's open, it was a resounding success at the last election, so...
Great. Well, thanks for keeping us informed. I was hoping that would be a great model for, you know, democratic nations to use for voting. Now, of course, John over here likes the whole pen and pencil.
Pencil and paper, yep.
Okay. John, your next... thank you very much, Miles, for the Australian story. John?
While we're in Australia, copying music to Apple's best-selling digital jukebox, the iPod, is illegal in Australia. Apparently, the U.S. and the U.K. have a semblance of fair use copyright laws, which allows you to copy music to a device for personal use. Australia does not, and anyone who has copied songs from a CD onto an iPod or a computer hard drive has broken the law.
Australian law.
Right. According to the Sydney Morning Herald, more than 100,000 Australians have done this, have listened to music on a digital music player, which means, you know, you've had to copy it over there. So that's 100,000 potential convicts.
Well, you know, the whole continent was a prison before, so it's pretty much on its way again, I guess. I would assume with that many people conflicting with the law, they'll probably modify the law rather than prosecute the people.
You'd
think.
Yeah, I hope so.
Thanks for keeping us informed on that. Sean, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Good morning.
Good morning. Sir, would you like to start off with a news story? I want a second to take a breather.
Is it supposed to be innocent until proven guilty?
Oh, in Australia? Well, I guess so, but if they're self-proclaiming that they've downloaded files.
Punish the masses for the few?
A police spokesman said it's unlikely the Australian Federal Police would investigate individuals for offenses such as illegally copying a CD yet.
Illegally copying your own CD?
Yes.
Okay.
The truth is no one has made an official complaint,
right.
So it really hasn't come up. It's just this potential for disaster
that's
waiting there.
All right. Well, thank you for that. Thanks, John. Sean?
Yeah, the FCC has agreed to allow TiVo to who, of course, is the maker of the popular video, digital video recorder, to share digital broadcasts with up to 10 other TiVo units with the same customer account.
Okay, so you have a customer account. You've got, for some reason, 10 TiVo units in your house. I don't know why you'd want to do that. And now, if one TiVo has content on it, you could play it through the from the other TiVo.
Correct.
I could see it if you're if you're a business or something like that who TiVos different things and trainings, materials, whatever, being able to share it among your different departments.
Well, I think there's a lot of people in the U.S. that have multiple TVs and probably multiple TiVos or want multiple TiVos.
Now, the story was talking about going through the internet. So is this only for people who have cable internet access, for example?
Well, I'm not sure if it was about going through the internet.
No, I think it's about sharing with other units in the household.
Yeah.
Oh, in the same household.
Yeah.
Well, it's the same customer ID, so you'd have to...
People do own... I know quite a few people own multiple TiVo units. Maybe the bedroom, the front room, their kids.
Right. And it does make sense if you record on one to be able to play it on the other instead of moving the TiVos around the house.
I would like to see just a TiVo playback unit, not an actual recorder, but just you've got your TiVo, it records information to it, and then you've got multiple playback units at the other TVs.
Right.
So you download programs from that.
And it looks like in TiVo, instead of TiVo doing that, they're just going to say, get multiple TiVos.
Right.
You'll get more storage space, and you can set your upstairs one to record all your private material.
Which makes sense since they charge a fee, a monthly fee or a lifetime fee. So
right, that makes sense.
When it's fee-based, it makes sense that they want to charge you for more.
All right. Miles?
The Virginia Tech I practiced this and I couldn't get it.
Try again.
We still
Amorphophallus titanum, or a corpse plant, is going to bloom.
That's what you're saying, the orchid that smells like a corpse.
Yes.
Okay, good.
That smells like, flesh, or it sounds like, flesh.
Smells like rotting flesh.
yum.
I know what I'm getting my wife.
Only blooms every 4 to 20 years, and the bloom only lasts 2 to 3 days.
And where can we experience the smell that is this wonderful
plant? And it's set to bloom on August 4th at Virginia Tech.
They've scheduled the blooming? How do they know that?
They are better botanists than I am.
Did it bloom or not?
That's August 4th was yesterday.
2 days ago, actually.
Today's the 6th?
Miles, you are so not on it.
I am so not on it. Oh,
don't
man.
Have a job.
It's that whole waking up.
It is currently blooming right now. I said that. What are you talking about?
Thanks, Miles. John?
Leading into our topic today, we're not starting it right now, but there's a hacker convention called DEF CON, which took place July 30th through August 1st in Alexis Park, Las Vegas. A trio of teenagers set the record for the longest Wi-Fi connection, non-amplified. It was 55.1
miles.
55.1 miles. They used two 3-meter dishes.
Were they round dishes or were they horn type?
Parallax dishes.
Okay.
To establish the signal. They first tried it amplified. Which doesn't even come close to the amplified record, which was set in Sweden, which I think is 122 miles, using a weather balloon.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's some discussion about if you send something way up in the stratosphere where it's got a much clearer shot, does that really count as a connection because it's not really realistic?
Right.
Anyway, they did set the record for the longest unamplified connection.
And again, the distance?
Again, 55.1 miles.
55.
Now, they established the connection. They had a judge on each end from DEF CON. Who gave them an encrypted message to send, and then the judge verified that it was received at the other end. Then they turned all their amplification equipment off and sent the signal again and sent a new message, and it was received. So 55.1 miles is the current longest unamplified.
And this is, I'm assuming, Wi-Fi, one of the 802.11
specs.
802.11b. Okay.
Yeah.
So if you do have a hub in your house, people can probably communicate with it pretty effectively with parabolic dishes, probably half that distance if you're not focusing it towards them. But interesting. Thank you very much for that.
You're welcome.
Sean. Yeah.
I have two quick ones here. Toshiba has introduced a 60-gigabyte 1.8-inch hard drive, which means that...
flash card size.
Fourth quarter... No. 1.8. It's that's a platter.
Okay.
So this is a small hard drive that would fit in a PDA or MP3, tiny notebooks.
That's a new form factor size, right?
No. It's what they use in small notebooks.
Okay.
Really thin and PDAs. Same size drive they use in the iPod.
Okay.
So what this means is in the fourth quarter of this year, you may be seeing 60 gig iPods and just, throwing it out there. Sony has announced that they're going to include Blu-ray disc in their PlayStation 3 console. This is their next generation DVD technology, which can hold about 25 gigabytes per layer.
And you can get a recordable unit like that.
It looks like all PlayStation 3s will have support for Blu-ray. So this is one way for Sony to spread the technology.
So Blu-ray will just hit the market pretty hard.
Is that backwards compatible with DVD and CD, do they say?
The drive will probably be, but not the technology necessarily itself.
These are more for high definition. I don't know. Compatibility in the early generation, I'm sure they will fit compatibility in there.
Yeah.
I mean, geez,
probably by having another laser.
They got plus R and dash R
right
into the same drives. So even if they can't do it with the same, you know, transistor.
That means we might see
laser,
games.
They might have to do
we might see games written for the PlayStation 3 that are 25 gigs of data.
Yeah.
Talking a lot of video. Talking more than.
Could be a lot of video.
Hours and hours of possible video.
It could be a higher resolution graphics.
Right.
For, you know, inside the game itself.
Yeah.
Make for a more beautiful experience.
Yeah, I think of 25 gigs as it's now getting back to the size where you could make backups with just four disks, like when you had just four floppies to back up your entire computer.
Yeah, you could do that.
But I think
the PlayStation 3 won't be recordable.
Yeah.
But we'll probably be seeing this technology come out of the PlayStation into the personal computer.
Let's hope so.
But I think they'll be using the space mostly for HD content.
Yeah.
Because they really want you to use these.
Basically, this will be an HD player right away.
Yeah.
So you just need a television.
So you can. Oh, the game's going to look so much better than on a television.
All right. Thank you, Sean. Yeah. Anybody really pressing to get one more story in? Yeah. Okay, good. Let's go on with our topic of the day. First, I want to invite people to call in. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. We do have internet access here, so you can send us email by going to geekspeak.org, click on the Geeks, and click on Send a Message, fill out that form, and we'll get it. Those are ways to communicate with us, ask us questions, and we'll respond to you on air. About anything. We can handle any kind of technical questions or problems you have. Even if we don't answer correctly, we'll be able to answer it. And what we want to talk about quickly is internet access speeds. And John and I both recently had stories of getting high-speed access finally in out of DSL range and how that went about it. So first we'll just talk about DSL is the most recent, well, the most current and most actively used high-speed personal high-speed access is DSL. It comes over your, it stands for Digital Subscriber Link, and it comes over your normal phone line. And it works great if you're close enough to a switch station or a central office, if you will, of your phone company. I think the distance is, I can't recall the distance exactly, but basically, if you're, 5 minutes away from your central office, you're too far away.
And central office isn't where you pay your phone bill. Central office is nowadays usually means it's like this cement slab with a metal cabinet built on it, which is where all the routing of the information goes through.
And, of course, that cement cabinet with the
box
that they put up, that would have to have DSL support in it, and some of them don't. So it really comes down to where the phone companies spread out far enough and how they can do it technically. And different towns, for example, in the San Lorenzo Valley have access but only to a certain range. So a lot of people, like people out in Bonnie Doon, you don't have internet access that's high speed. Well, the saving grace is coming, and that's internet cable. So basically, Comcast, the name of the company that services, I think, Scotts Valley and San Lorenzo Valley.
Pretty much everything in the Monterey Bay that Charter doesn't cover.
Right. So there's Charter and there's
Comcast.
And I don't know the Charter stat right now on their internet access, but on Comcast, they're basically rolling it out. But they're not doing a very effective job, I think, on communicating with customers. So one thing that John and I ran into is the problem of not having cable already. So, John, you actually do have a TiVo, but you don't have cable. So, explain that.
We have a satellite. We have a TiVo satellite receiver. It's hooked up to our satellite dish and receive all our information that way for a TiVo. We were using a dial-up account since we're too far from the central office.
And that's just a standard modem kind of thing.
In fact, we tried ISDN, and that was not able to happen out there either. We're that far away, I guess.
Okay.
Or the equipment is that old. So we were using a dial-up modem. And it was on a good day, 28.8, which is about half the speed they're supposed to run at.
Mm-hmm.
Slow, painful. And we run an online business, so it was, often I would go off to the local coffee shop to use our wireless connection.
Just upload stuff?
Yeah.
And you described your morning routine when you had the 28.8. Can you do that, the family version of your morning routine?
Sure.
With that slow connection, what was it like?
Well, I work from a shed on our property, so I would commute down to the shed, stepping over the Van Ness lugs. I would turn on my computer. I have a laptop, so basically I just open it up, and plug all the cables in, and while it was waking up, I would get some stuff ready. And then I would dial up, and while I dialed up, I could go back up to the house and grab some food, or I, you know, go pick blackberries, whatever. I would have some time, and I would also be able to plan my day. I'd write down what I was going to be doing for the day.
And this is just why your computer's connecting.
This is why my computer's, you know, dialing up, and no, it didn't work that time, so we'll try it again. You know, it usually takes a few tries. So that was great. It gave me time to plan my day and what was going to happen. And now I have a wireless router serving my house, and so I go down, open up my laptop, and my email is already downloaded by the time I've gotten all the cables plugged in. So I no longer have time to plan my day. I no longer have time to figure out what I'm going to be doing. So it's very disruptive. So
so you're more productive than just throwing your day off.
It is.
Okay.
I can waste time at 100 times the speed now.
Now, well, I guess we'll go ahead and start with my story on trying to get this. Basically, I thought I could get it. So I contacted Comcast via their 800 number and talked to some people. I think they were in Texas somewhere. And said, you know, I want to get the service. And they said, well, we have to get someone out there to find out if you can even get cable, let alone internet access. I said, well, first off, this is my neighbor's address. I know he already has cable. Can he get internet access? Yes, he can get internet access. Wow. Okay, if he can get internet access, then I can, because I'm right next to him.
And this is after you'd called before asking if you could.
Yeah.
No, you can't.
Well, so they said, no, you definitely have to fill out this, like, service check out to see if you can get service thing, and someone has to come out there. I said, fine. I gave them information. I get a letter. They said they'd call back. You know, get a letter a couple days later. You can't have access. The address on the letter is not my home. So there's already problems. So I call again, and sure enough, yes, your neighbor and your other neighbor both can get it. No problem. You can't. That doesn't make any sense. So at first it was like, no, you can't. Okay, can these two neighbors? Yes. So can't I? No, you can't. And the logic there was just so baffling that I tried talking this person into it. I finally called back and talked to someone else. I said, hi, I want you to just listen to me for a second. Don't look at your computer. Just listen to what I'm saying. And after talking to someone and getting them to be a human on the other side of the phone line, that person went, all right, we're going to make this work for you. And as soon as I had a champion, an actual person that I knew the name of and a direct line for and a ticket, whatever, then it started going slowly forward. So that's the first recommendation. Don't believe what they say. Try to get them to think about what they're saying. But also, if you can find a neighbor that you know has it, then that's a great strength. So I was able to finally get it after a long period of time of some checking and installation and la-da-da-da-da. And then I said, John, you live closer to the cable company than I do. We're not on the same street, but I've looked at the lines just driving down the street between our houses and see that we're on the same connection point. So I know that your signal, you can have it. And you called, and so please tell us what happened to you.
Well, I called and got much the same story. No, I'm sorry, internet broadband is not available in your area through cable. So I did pretty much the same thing. I, you know, told them, you know, look, I run this business from my home. It's an internet-based business. I do it so I can stay home with my kids.
You got them to think
you're
a human.
Humanity. And said, can you just send someone out to check? And so they finally said, all right, we'll send someone out to check. So the person came out and checked, and I'm not really sure if they checked or not, because they called me up on the phone and said, nah, you know what, you're not going to be able to because you're just too far away. The fiber signal gets converted into RF, so the digital signal gets converted to basically a radio frequency signal. And nah,
you're too far
work.
For the RF.
Right. So I said, I've got a friend who lives at the end of the road down this way. He gets it. And the installer, who's local, said, really? Well, let's try it then. I'll put in yes, and they'll send someone out to do it. I've got my neighbor who lives right at the end of the street. He's also been really, really wanting fast internet connection. In fact, he said, we're thinking about moving, or I'm going to have to get a job just so I can get fast internet connection again, because he really misses it. He used to work for Sun Microsystems. So he had someone come up on Monday, and they were an independent contractor. They didn't speak a lot of English, and they weren't able to get it to work. And so he came up with the feeling of, you know, we're just too far away, it's not going to work. I had already scheduled someone to come up Wednesday and install it on us, and after that, I was pretty low expectation thinking.
Because they said RF's too far. Kind
right.
Of
uh-huh. So I was thinking maybe there's some other device that's not upgraded in between reliably.
Right, right. There must be some box we're not seeing.
So they came in Wednesday. He did a line check, said, everything looks great. Let me hook up your modem. He hooked up the modem. It took him like an hour, and we were done. And I had internet access. It took me another hour on the phone with Comcast, because I didn't have Internet Explorer, so I had to go through a different method of
right.
of getting on to the Comcast system. and I was up and surfing. And
so,
in fact,
so basically, you had I had looks like two or three failures of trying to them saying no. You had a couple failures and a neighbor saying no, you can't get it, and right. finally, still yes, it works fine.
And not only does it work fine, it is faster than advertised. I was expecting it to be around 3,000 kilobits, and it's been close to 3,500 to 4. It's been fast. It's been very fast. Since then, my neighbor has had someone else come out, and it turned out, well, they told him he had a modem that was incorrect for the region. I'm not sure if that's just a way of saying we don't know why, but here's another modem. Oh, now it works. So he's on it as well. So if you're up in the Zayanti Lompico area,
you can get it.
Hesitate to say this because the more people connected, the slower our connection's going to be.
When everyone knows, Joe.
But anyway, it's faster than a dial-up connection, no matter how slow it gets. So
this program is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. You are listening to Geek Speak. If you have questions or comments, the numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. This week on This American Life, family legends, stories about what lurks somewhere in all families, secrets, lies, grudges, and bad behavior, and whether it's always a good idea to root out family flaws. That's This American Life, Sunday at 10 a.m. right after Car Talk on Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. And, of course, you are listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. I'm Lyle Trox on the air. Mar, John Tracy, Sean Cleveland, Miles Elam. We are waiting at this point for your telephone calls. We have a few on cue, which we'll go into now. Right after this program is supported by a grant from CruiseIO, providing internet services including DSL, spam filters, PHP, MySQL, now with nationwide access. Information about CruiseIO membership is available online at cruiseio.com or by calling 459-6301. The phone number is to call into GeekSpeak, 476-2800, or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Of course, you can go to geekspeak.org, click on the Geeks, and click on Send a Message to fill out an email to us. We're taking your calls and questions about technology, concerns, questions about spam, for example, like our caller Bill from Santa Cruz. Welcome, Bill, to Santa Cruz, to GeekSpeak.
Hi, guys. I'm with two different, I have two different email sites, one with SBC Global and one with Cruiseio.com.
Mm-hmm.
And Cruiseio.com allegedly has a spam filter that I have turned on. And I'm getting, 40, 50 different pieces of spam a day.
Okay, through that Cruiseio?
Well, through a combination of SBC Global and Cruiseio, but plenty from both.
Mm-hmm.
And far more from Cruiseio than Cruiseio takes out with their spam filter. And I had, about 6 months ago, I tried one of the spam filters that were, I got it off of the internet, and I think I paid for it. And they had a program where they would send back letters to each of the people that I got email from,
right,
family, etc. And a lot of people, legitimate people, seem to be getting lost and prevented from getting on my email account.
Right.
So I was wondering, what do you guys suggest, or what do you guys use?
All right. First off, there is the service provided by your ISP. And you might be getting a lot more spam on your Cruiseio account because you might have had the Cruiseio account longer. Is that true?
Yes.
Okay, so the longer you have an email address, the more spam you'll get at it because the more widely known the email address is throughout the spammers of the world. But Cruiseio spam filters are actually kind of, you have to set them up and help them along and kind of keep them going and improve them. I believe that's how they work. I don't personally use that service. But
how do you mean improve them? I mean, I put the spam has changed all. I mean, there's no words that you can eliminate because they're misspelling everything.
Right. Well, the spam filters that Cruiseio runs, I believe they run a thing called Spam Assassin. It might be a modified version. And basically, it is going to tag messages as spam or not. And then you use your filter to determine a spam message has to be put here. But, you know, let's get into detail about how Cruiseio works a later time. I'll actually get the owner of Cruiseio, Chris Nichols, to come on and talk a little bit about the spam filters at a later show. So let's talk about the other alternatives you can do that will help you at both locations. What mail email client are you using?
Outlook Express.
Okay. That's one problem right there. Miles? What email client do you use?
I use Thunderbird.
How much did it cost you?
Nothing. It's free.
Okay.
A download from www.mozilla.org. Sean uses Mozilla Mail.
Yep.
Oh, or are you on Thunderbird right now?
Oh, I use Thunderbird.
Okay, so the geeks all use Thunderbird, except for the Mac people don't necessarily, right?
I use Mail.
Okay. So if you, since you're on a Windows 98 machine, definitely switch out of Outlook. Go ahead and go to mozilla.org, download Thunderbird. It's a standalone email client, and it's got a great spam filter learning thing. And what it does is, as you get messages, you say, oh, this is spam, this is spam, this is spam. And it starts figuring out pretty quickly what spam messages are spam, what spam messages aren't. The problem with that kind of thing is that you do have to download the messages first and let the client look at them before you find out if you have, before you find out how much spam you have, get rid of your spam. Do you understand that, Bill?
Yes.
Okay. So I would switch to that because Outlook Express doesn't have that kind of thing where it learns. It just doesn't, it isn't part of the program. You could try to set up all these rules, but as you said, they spell things wrong and it just doesn't work. But the learning algorithms, which is Bayesian filters, Miles, how do they work?
They're pattern matching. I mean, they'll look for words that are common. They'll look for just patterns in general. It won't just be the email message itself. It may also be in the headers, mm-hmm. like the types of things being sent, whether or not the headers look forged.
Things like that.
There's a lot of things that are going on, a lot of them that I can't tell you
right
off the bat, like what the mathematics are to it.
So, Bill, that's our first recommendation.
Yeah, I held out on moving from Outlook for a long time. And I wish I would have gone earlier.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
You know, the one thing I miss about the Outlook package is that I had my address book all in Outlook, and it was syncing to my Palm device.
Yeah.
So when you switch away from the Thunderbird, all of a sudden you got this thing where do my addresses go? And if you don't
and
have
even for my cell phone software, yeah, everything uses Outlook.
Yeah, and that's a problem because in Thunderbird, if you have all your addresses in Thunderbird, well, if you don't have all your addresses, then the spam filter doesn't. You aren't able to say, you know, mark anything that comes from a friend as not spam, which is a great feature for one of these learning algorithms, because sometimes a person will send a, take a look at my family's website, and that's all it is, and it looks like spam to the spam learning software. So it's nice to be able to say, anybody that I know, anybody I correspond with, don't mark the messages as spam.
And there's other spam software out there, but frankly, why? You know, just move to a different mail client. Move to Thunderbird and use their spam.
Now, can I move my address book to Thunderbird?
Yes, you can. If you're on, do you sync with a Palm device?
No.
Okay. Well, then you're going to be fine to move over. Basically, when you open up Thunderbird, there's an import addresses. Is that right, Miles? Is that how it works?
I haven't done it in so long. Yeah.
Thunderbird can import messages from Outlook. Addresses from Outlook. And actually, it can import mail as well. So, yeah, you can do that. The only issue is that if you're trying to sync something, you might have some trouble trying to set it up. But since you're not, I'd do that.
Cool.
There you go.
Okay, thanks for the advice.
Well, certainly. Thanks for the call, Bill.
Bye.
All right. Dee from SoCal, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Yeah, actually, I have kind of a two-part question.
Uh-huh.
Since you were talking about Internet access, I would like to know how, first part is, how is the fact that the passage of that new bill or supposedly that gives access, surveillance access, the same surveillance access to internet connections via phone line,
right,
as traditional lines. How is that going to affect people? If you can address that. And then the second part is it covering just the basic phone lines, or is it going to apply to DSL as well as wireless?
Miles, do you have some information on this, Bill?
Nothing specific. I don't know the specific bill. I just think of things like wiretapping laws that were put in by Clinton.
Yeah.
That already allowed, if you had a court order, just by pressing a button, you could start tapping a line. And modem communication by default is not encrypted, so I don't see any technical reason why they couldn't do that.
Any email or, you know, any kind of internet connection that you use, if you log into your ISP, they instituted a bill now which forces ISPs to allow surveillance of the internet connection. So it doesn't necessarily have to be at your home, I believe. It could be from anywhere that you access your ISP, like if you use someone else's phone line who might not have an ISP, and you use it to dial into your internet connection, or, you know, dial up to get into your email, that they can tap those lines, and they didn't have that authorization previously.
It is true that there was there's some legislation in place that allows I think it's the FBI, to contact an ISP and say, I want to look at this person. And the ISP has to provide all logs and things of that nature to that person. So, for example, let's say an ISP has mail on their servers, and you download the mail onto your computer, and then you disconnect from the internet. The copy might still be on the ISP. So now, if there is a warrant to get this information, the federal agent can contact the ISP and say, I want to see this person's information, and the ISP has to give it to them.
Right, but now they don't even have to do that. They can just sit there and monitor it.
I guess we don't know enough about this information to give you a formed answer on that. Sorry.
Okay, and so the other thing is that, do you think that something like this would affect wireless as well?
I don't see why not. Once it gets to your house, that's where Wi-Fi is. It's already out of the equation for what we're talking about here. What we're talking about is upstream from your house, talking about the communication lines between your house and the ISP. So whether you use wireless in your home or not, it doesn't sound like it would make a difference.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, because there are a lot of cafes that have wireless connections, or, you know, other facilities that have, other than your house, that have wireless connections. And so I was just thinking, are they just tapping all internet connections now? Or
well, from what you're describing, it doesn't have to do with your immediate network connection, how you're connecting to the internet. It happens more upstream, closer to your ISP, to your mail server itself. So whether or not you're using wireless or whether you're using a wire is immaterial. They're basically equivalent.
The Metro Santa Cruz, you're in Santa Cruz. Metro Santa Cruz, the April 21st to 28th, 2004, had a great article about this exact issue. And it was Chris Nicholson, who is the owner and operator of Cruzeo, talked about what the new FBI plan would force him to allow spying on local internet users or give up his business. And it covers this entire story pretty well. I'll make a link to that later on from the GeekSpeak website. Geekspeak.org,
okay.
And you can read that article, which I think would give you a big picture about what's going on. All right?
Okay.
Thank you very much for the call.
Sure.
Yeah, now I want to take a look at that article.
It's a good article. Great picture, too. Brent from Santa Cruz, welcome.
Hey, Lyle.
Hey.
I've need a recommendation on a laptop Wi-Fi adapter.
Okay. Not a card, but an adapter, because
it's a
laptop?
A card, I should say, yeah.
Okay.
I've already tried a D-Link and a Linksys, both of which were very unhappy.
And what do you mean they were unhappy?
Well, the D-Link reception was very, very poor, and the Linksys just flat wouldn't work in my laptop.
Okay, and you have a Windows machine?
Yes.
Sean, you got any ideas?
All the pins seem to be there.
Well, I have a suspicion about the Linksys just because the little LEDs on the card weren't brightly lit, so it might have been a poor power connection on that particular one.
That's what I'm thinking. Maybe your card slot is not getting enough power to the card.
But the D-Link certainly seemed to be working okay, at least in terms of looking at the little bouncing lights.
Now, I've tried a bunch of different.
Yeah.
I've tried a bunch of different cards, and the best one I've ever used is Cisco.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, but how about...
A lot of companies use Cisco because for that reason. Because they have
really?
So you might want to try Cisco. There's another possibility. If you do have a problematic PC card slot, you might consider getting a USB adapter. But, you know, with the biggest thing with these Wi-Fi cards, they're trying to make them all compact. It sticks to slide into the slot.
Right.
And then that little, you know, packet that sticks on the outside is your antenna.
Right.
And it's not a serious antenna. It's like kind of a joke, I mean, in a lot of ways.
Right.
What kind of range are you trying to get? Amazing range or something?
No, actually, I was actually trying it there in the studios, and it wasn't working very well.
It's really, I mean, right in the studio space.
Right. I mean, Sean,
what are you using for your wireless card? Is it built in?
Yeah, it's built into my notebook.
Darn.
But I do have a spare Cisco card you could try out here, yeah.
Okay. So Brent, get down
now, here. Now, we had our connection down for a bit.
You know, Brent, that's true. Last week we had a lot of net connections here at the station. Maybe it was just bad.
It could be. Well, I guess, you know, I mean, I want to be able to walk into, like, Staples or Office Max, and they don't have Cisco cards.
Yeah. Right, that's true. So are you running XP?
I'm ashamed to tell you what I'm running.
Okay.
Oh, 95.
Well, that's probably the problem.
No, it's ME, actually.
ME? Oh, man, you should be ashamed. Brent, I think it's pretty funny that you're calling into a show at the station you engineer for to talk about radio transmissions. I mean, are you supposed to be the expert on radio transmissions?
I understand the radio transmission part of it, guys.
Okay.
Okay.
It's the driver support for ME is the problem, probably.
Yeah, you might want to check out the USV.
I've been hearing those
are pretty cool. They're really small.
So, yeah, and you could get those at any store.
Well, I mean, do you guys have a feel for like, does brand naming anything in this Wi-Fi stuff? Is Linksys better than D-Link, better than Netgear, better than anybody else?
Netgear, Linksys, D-Link, all the same. Yeah, they all pretty much seem to be the same.
Yeah, okay.
And some people will tell you Linksys is worse. Some people will say they've had problems with D-Link.
And some of these cards, you crack them open, you're going to look at the chips inside. They're the same thing.
Right,
I mean, just
right,
a package.
Okay.
But
I like Linksys, personally. Like, yeah. I've never had a problem.
Yeah, and I use a lot of D-Link stuff, and it seems to work fine. I think what's going to come down to it is your machine.
Yeah, I know.
And then also trying to get more, like, you know what they promise is not what Wi-Fi can really do. That's a big thing to remember, because they're just going to overpromise you in the perfect conditions.
Well, see, I understand the wireless side of this whole thing and distances and all of that, but it's just the actual hardware for the computer. I just figured you guys would.
Yeah. Well, you know, the wireless, I feel bad, too, because I'm the one who brought it in, but the little gateway that I brought in is not very good. it's Orinoco, and it's made by HP,
right.
And it's like the first generation.
It's one of those first generation things. That's why you didn't want to.
I could never get security to work on it. So it was supposed to be just a stopgap, you know?
The glorious technology that's donated to a non-profit,
I happened to be at Fry's, and I picked up a $20 one. I would have gotten two, one for the station, but they only had one left. And I replaced, because I had two of those Orinocos. So I have a backup. Anyway, I installed it at home, and it has two antennas on it. And, wow, what a difference.
Wow.
And so maybe we won't need to do is get a new wireless gateway.
Okay,
so anyone that has an extra wireless gateway or wants to donate to a nonprofit organization, that beautiful one like KOSB, you're welcome to do so. The phone number is here, 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Brent?
Yes?
I'll see you later.
Thanks.
You know, we just got a wireless gateway for our home. It was after the rebate and everything. It was like $45.
Is that?
I wish
you got the new kind too, didn't you? G, A, B, or B,
yeah,
G.
It's a G. Yeah. It doesn't have
B and
A also.
B and G, that's right.
It's B and G.
So that's 802.11b and G. G is the newest, and it's backwards compatible with B.
Although there are new ones out there that do A, B, and G.
They're expensive.
It looks like we've got a neighbor of mine on the phone. Craig, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi. I tuned in just as you guys were talking about, I believe it was, high-speed connection in Lompico.
Yeah, but we're not going to tell you. No, I'm just kidding.
You're not going to tell me. All right, cool.
Yes.
There goes your bandwidth, Lyle.
So what? Where are you in Lompico? How far up?
I'm almost up to the reservoir.
Okay. So do you have cable access, or your neighbors have cable?
Yeah.
Okay. You can get it in an access.
Because Lyle's at the reservoir.
No, I'm actually, you know, I don't turn off on to west. So, okay. Craig, what you got to do is you got to call Comcast toll-free number and say, I want this. My neighbor has it. I know I can get it. It's internet access. It's they can give you a discounted first 3 months or whatever like that. It tags on to your cable bill. It's some more money. It's about equivalent to DSL if you already have cable.
I see.
And they give you a modem, and you plug it in your computer. And actually, I was concerned that I wouldn't be able to put a router in legally, because when I had cable down in Los Angeles years ago, internet access, they wanted it only hooked up to one computer. So that's not true with Comcast. Comcast is cool with you putting in a router and a wireless hub and whatever and plugging this line into it. So what you need to do is call them up, get a service rep out there, add it on to the service. Now, if you already have cable, you said you already have cable? You don't. Okay. So that's going to be the tricky part. They might not have your house in the system. So if you know a neighbor that does have cable, you know, if you're seeing someone watching TV all the time, then when you do call ups, if they say no, you can't get it, then tell them to check the address of your neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
And if they say, yeah, you can, then get that person to respond to you as a human that, oh, that makes sense that you could get it then.
Sure.
And you're going to need to get someone to come out to check to your house, can get it, and then someone to come in and install it. And it was about a three-hour install process in my place. But then again, I was doing a little bit more confusing stuff. So
mm-hmm.
So there you go. You can
so
get it.
In order to get the thing hooked up, what's the initial fee?
You know, the fees about it, I don't know exactly the fees. And since we're a nonprofit, the FCC kind of likes us not to talk about commercial monies. So I don't want to talk about it anyway. But, you know, it's probably under $100 to get everything going.
Wow.
And then you'll get a monthly bill that's equivalent to DSL costs.
I'm sorry, I love it that you weren't paying attention. I don't care how much it costs. I want internet access.
Yeah, that's true for me. I was paying pretty expensive slow speed access with an ISDN line, so I knew that it was going to be cheaper, and sure enough, it is. And the only problem that I've had is that I all of a sudden have cable in my home, which means that my TV has cable,
and you can start
watching it.
You can drop the basic cable service.
You can.
As soon as it gets hooked up, you can drop it.
Yeah. And I'll be doing it after 3 months because there's an introductory cost that makes it the same. But, yeah.
Okay.
Then you drop the cable cost, and it's still about the same cost, but it's a little bit less.
But you don't have to keep the basic cable to keep that low cost.
Excellent.
Craig, I would love it if after you got hooked up and things were working and such, you shot us an email so that we knew someone else succeeded in our neighborhood. And you
can do
that from the GeekSpeak website.
So, guys, do you have to...
Yes.
Like, with DSL, you have to use special software to dial in. Do you have to do that with cable?
You do to hook up Comcast originally, but we have nothing now that we're using. We have a wireless router. Both I had to install Explorer on my laptop in order to connect to the Comcast website the first time to establish the account, and then I hooked up our wireless router to the modem, and then our second computer, all I did was
plug
the airport card in and go.
Yeah. Now, when I hooked it up, the person that came out to install everything, he knew what he's doing, and he just got on my Mac and was a little confused to where to find proxy settings. And as soon as I showed him where proxy settings was, he did some proxy settings input stuff to get connected and then enabled the account and actually made a username for me. And I didn't need it because I'm not going to be using email through them. But that's all it was. And he did it through Safari, so you don't need to have an Internet Explorer.
Right, yeah. That's only for signing up, though.
Uh-huh.
That's the same thing I had to do was do the proxy because they have a secure proxy you have to go through. But that's only for signing up. Once you're done signing up, like, I've reinstalled the OS on a machine, so all of that is gone. However, I can still connect.
Oh, no. Yeah, you don't need anything else, right? Yeah.
Okay.
So,
once you're to establish a connection from the computer, you don't have to do anything.
Right.
No, that's right.
Now, with DSL, you do.
You do?
Yeah.
Well, I don't.
Through SBC Global, you do. There's a special dial-up software.
Really?
Now, I could never get that to work. And they had to come out to my house quite a few times. And I live on Highway 9, so I was able to get DSL right away. It was never a question.
And we were all terribly jealous.
Yeah. So the guy came, and what had happened is I took my DSL router from Berkeley and brought it over here. Why pay for another one, right?
Right, right.
Well, it just so happens that there are some settings that I could not have gotten to. It took a special machine. He actually had to hook up a little handheld system to
it. Oh, you're talking about
and change
the
some
router
settings.
Itself, right.
So that was the reason why I couldn't use the software to connect, but I've helped neighbors do it.
Right.
And frankly, I don't like that. So what I had them do is hardwire a DSL line into my house, so it's separate from my phone line. And I've always had better, I think, speed with that too.
Right.
You're not sharing the same line.
Right.
Then you have to put little terminators on the other phones.
For the cable service, we did get the box that came with it, and for the introductory rate, blah blah blah, we were able to get that included for free. So the router itself was one of theirs, and it worked like kind of right out of the box. Or the modem.
It would have cost me for a router or the modem. Yeah, it would have cost me for the modem, but the $200 install fee was waived as long as you sign an agreement that you'll do it for 3 years.
Jim from Big Sur. Hi.
Hello.
Welcome to GeekSpeak.
Yeah, I have two questions for you guys. First one has to do with the fact that I just moved into a cabin down here in Big Sur, and I haven't hooked up my computer yet, but I subscribe to Net Zero. So my question is, Net Zero promises 5 times normal phone modem speed.
Mm-hmm.
And my question is, do you guys know anything about Net Zero? Is there any other better way to get internet access?
From Big Sur?
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
You're basically going to be at a dial-up, unfortunately. You could theoretically get satellite, assuming you have access to the southern sky.
I have a dish system for TV, but understanding is, you know, that sends your signal out.
Right.
But to receive it, then you're I guess half of what you're doing is on a modem, right?
And it's actually the other way around. You send information through your modem,
right.
And then you receive it from the satellite. And the download speeds are actually quite good. It's a little expensive. And if you have satellite service for your television, then you can it's aiming at geosynchronous orbit, so you can also hit most likely one of their ISPs, the satellites for internet service. But you're right, it's a little weird. You've got to use your phone line as well. And if you really want to have good download speeds and you're going to not move from your cabin in Big Sur, then that's your option, unfortunately. Unless someone else knows of a DSL or something in Big Sur, I doubt it.
You should check with your local ISP. They always know what's available in your area. And sometimes local ISPs will even be setting up what's called a Yagi system, where they have a wireless antenna that they're beaming wireless signals to other places.
Like Half Moon Bay, for example, which is similar in some ways to Big Sur, that it's on the coast and it's not, it's pretty industrial though compared to Big Sur. They have Wi-Fi sweeping the entire area. Like, it's totally covered Wi-Fi, free for everybody, the entire city of Half Moon Bay. Big Sur might be doing something similar to that.
Well, you know, I'm receiving you guys through a translator.
That's right. We have a transmitter in Big Sur. Actually, one of the only, there's like two stations you can get in Big Sur.
I can only get one.
Yeah. Yeah.
When you're talking about FM.
Right.
And thank God for that. But
I got to say, I wish we could put a wireless transmitter that would saturate Big Sur for internet access too.
Well, I'm wondering why we can't. I mean, if there's a translator, what is that? That's on a
There's an antenna in Big Sur on one of the hills, right?
Right. Well, I mean, anyway, that seems like the next step.
That would be cool. I'll have to talk to Brandt, our engineer, to see what kind of complexities we can get into.
Yeah, talk it up.
Sean, you got a point?
Yeah, regarding Net Zero, they use a compression technology on both sides. And you're not going to see any speed up in downloads of files or attachments.
Uh-huh.
And that includes music or video.
Right. Well, no, you will see some on images, though. Because images, they re-encode the image at a lower...
Anything you're browsing in your web, you're going to probably see a little speed increase.
They do this weird thing where there's images on the online that are a certain size, and so Net Zero basically goes, well, let's compress this with lossy compression, because it's an image, you'll still see the picture. You get it, and it's going to be worse quality than it was.
Right.
And I think there's settings for that, but basically it gets
anytime
you fast.
Anytime you apply compression, you're going to lose data.
And, right. Well, unless it's lossless compression, but they already do that. Modems already are compressing the heck out of things. So they do more compression, and sometimes it's data loss compression, sometimes it's not.
That's the case. I mean, am I still better off keeping Net Zero using compression than going to standard SBC phone modem?
Okay.
It'll be fine,
yeah. They're just an ISP, too. In fact, I got to say that their receiving modems are probably in the same space as the SBC ones.
So
You know, it's not, technically, it's not that much different.
If you like what you have and the price is good, then
stay with it.
Okay.
Thank you for the
question.
Call. Oh, yes, quickly.
I want to take music off of old LPs, vinyl, and run it into my computer and come out with a CD of that music.
No problem. People do it all the time. It's illegal, but, well, maybe it's not.
Well,
who knows?
I'm not reselling. Okay. I just want to listen to it.
You have a turntable?
I do.
Okay. The turntable is going to have the line outs. You just need to find a line out that work into your line in on your computer. Now, there's some great software out there that actually break up that album for you automatically. When it gets a silence, it will consider it another song.
Okay.
I don't personally know the software because I don't use it. I do have access to vinyl, but I haven't started encoding any vinyl. Geeks, you know any vinyl, auto vinyl to MP3 file thing or to CDs? Any software like that? No.
But connecting an RCA connector to the sound card import.
Yeah, but then you've got to know when to make a new track.
You have to do that anyway.
No, there's software out there that auto indexes it into.
You know, Easy CD Creator
does
that ship a box with the special connector.
What's that? Easy Creator?
Easy CD Creator.
Okay.
Not very. It's CD-ROM burning software with this capability. I believe.
I think most CD burning can do this now.
I would think so. Personally, I like Nero, so you might want to go to Ahead Software.
Uh-huh.
And check to see if they do it first.
Okay.
Shoot an email to geeks@geekspeak.org and
we'll
help you out with that. Yeah.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Jim from Big Sur. We got a couple more calls, but unfortunately we're not going to get to them today. One of them is about high-speed access via satellite. Really? Seriously? Yes, Jim and Paso Robles, you can get high-speed access through satellite if you've got access to the southern sky. It's got some problems. It's got some expense, but you can do it. Miles, quickly.
Yes. Sorry, just a quick little limerick, just please, because it's geek speak. There once was a young woman named Bright who traveled much faster than light. She set out one day in a relative way and returned on the previous night.
Thank you very much for that. Gray Wolf Computer Systems has provided a grant in support of this program. Gray Wolf Computer Systems offers custom computer systems and personalized service for repairs, upgrades, and networks in the East Cliff Village Shopping Center in Santa Cruz. The geeks today, Miles Elam, Sean Cleveland, and John Tracy. Our producer is Maggie Cleveland. Thank you all for participating in GeekSpeak.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Lyle. Thank you, everybody.
To all of you that called in, thank you for listening to GeekSpeak and for participating by calling and asking us questions and concerns. Without you, it would just be us yakking. Who wants to talk? Listen to that. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP Santa Cruz, KDBH San Auto, or on the web at KUSP.org. Fine Print with Rick Kleffel is coming up next, followed by State of the Arts with Diana Wright Troxell, my mother, actually, and at noon, Two Steps in the Blues with Charlie Lang. For KUSP and for GeekSpeak, I'm Lyle Troxell.